The Joe Mason Show is on in 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We're going to spend the entire hour talking Major League Baseball, New York Mets baseball with Mark Berman coming up in a little while, Oakland A's baseball with Alex Hall. But up first, the Texas Rangers, I think they went all in, and I think they did pretty well. And here to talk all about that and more Rangers baseball, please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Phil, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great having you here. Tell us a little bit about your background with the Texas Rangers, because people are going to ask, he doesn't really have a blog, and we're going to give you that. That's rusholson.com. You can get everything over there. But tell us a little bit about your work with the Texas Rangers.
Well, I worked for the Rangers I worked for the team for quite a while, and before I worked for the team, I worked for the TV stations that carried their games, a couple of different ones. And what I worked at the stations was promoting the broadcast, trying to figure out ways to get people to watch the Rangers, which was in the late 90s was not difficult. Because they were pretty good. And then I moved over to the team side in about the year 2000. And with a very brief hiatus in 2001, I worked there all the way up until last year when I left to start my own company. And what I did for the Rangers was all manner of electronic creative. So creating TV spots, radio spots, videos for the website, articles for the website, just all sorts of creative services. And so I worked closely with just about every department, got to know, worked with some of the players, worked with some of the front office folks. And so and obviously watched a heck of a lot of baseball games. So that's my background with the Rangers.
All right. So you can adequately or more than adequately speak about the Texas Rangers then.
I'd like to think so.
I think so too. Anyhow, they made two big additions. Among others, they traded for Prince Fielder, and they signed Shin-Soo Choo. And are those good signings, you think? Because especially the Fielder signing, because they ended up losing someone like Ian Kinsler. So I guess that's like a multiple question. But let's first of all take the Fielder part. How much better do the Texas Rangers, or are the Texas Rangers, with Prince Fielder in the lineup?
You'd have to think that they have now greatly improved their production from the first base position. I mean, Prince Fielder slightly down year last year, but even then, numbers you wouldn't mind having. And so I feel like they've definitely improved their production potential there. It enables them to move Mitch Moreland to DH, so potentially you could improve your production there as well, depending on what else they do this offseason. They may not be done yet. And so I felt like it was a pretty good signing. What you sort of like with both of the Choo and Fielder signings, especially from a fan's perspective, is they really didn't cost that much other than money, other than Ian Kinsler, of course, which we can get to in a minute. But from a fan's standpoint, fans always want their team to go out and spend the big money and get the big players in here. And when you do that, unless there's draft pick compensation attached, it really doesn't hurt you at all. And the Rangers kind of went out and did what they did at very little cost to, let's say, their minor league system.
And that's important, too, because you don't want to deplete the farm. You have to have a strong farm club or you won't make it, right?
Yes, and the Rangers do have a good farm system. I think Baseball America rated them in the middle of the upper middle of the pack this most recent time. But a lot of the reason for that is they've graduated so many of their top prospects into the majors, like a Jerks and Profar, The other thing about it is they've got a lot of the strength in prospects is at the lower levels of the minors. The Rangers have just crazy strength among players at the lower levels, especially in the offensive positions, outfielders. They've got this kid, Joey Gallo, who's a tremendous power-hitting third base prospect. And so part of what the free agent signings and the Chu and the Fielder signings were about is bridging the gap until the time when those players are ready to contribute. So you've got massive talent on the farm, but it's a few years away. Free agency, that's a pretty good way to bridge the gap, because one of the things about big contracts is people will point out that the production you get may meet the value of the contract in the early years of the contract, but by the end of it, you may get declining production and the dollars don't match up. Well, the way you solve that is with young players who are coming up through the system who don't cost you a lot of money, who can pick up the slack from any declining contracts you may have. And the Rangers have a lot of that at the lower levels of their farm system.
And that's a beautiful thing. Now, Shin-Soo Choo. We talked to Brandon Kraling from RedReporter.com. It's pretty much, it is the number one Cincinnati Reds site. And he said he's going to miss him because the guy seems to always find a way to get on base. That's going to be a big thing for Texas, right?
I think so, and it's something they have needed. They have needed a guy, not that every team doesn't need a guy who gets on base at the top of the lineup, but it's something that they've needed. And during his best years, Ian Kinsler did very well at getting on base. That was not to the Shin-Soo Choo level, but he was a very effective player at getting on base and contributed a lot at the top of the lineup, not least because of his power as well, and then Kinsler could steal a base for you as well. But that, to me, is the biggest thing that Shin-Soo Choo brings, is the ability to get on base at the top of that lineup. You then go to Elvis Andrus, who's going to hit number two, it seems like. And there's a guy that I think has the potential to be even better offensively than he has been, to go with his sterling defense. And then you get into the meat of the lineup. Then you get into Prince Fielder. Then you get into Adrian Beltre. Then you get into Alex Rios. And the notion that a Shin-Soo Choo is going to be on base a lot for those guys, which, by the way, Prince Fielder gets on base a good bit as well. So Adrian Beltre is going to have the potential to move a lot of guys around the diamond.
Oh, yeah. And that's what they've needed, you know, because with the pitching staff that they have, and they're incredible, they have Yu Darvish, and then they have Perez, Harrison, Ogunda, and Tepish. That's going to be a pretty good little lineup, huh?
It is, and they're going to get Derek Holland back hopefully somewhere around midseason when he recovers from his injury. They've got Colby Lewis as well in camp on a minor league deal. He, if you all recall, was hurt the last couple of years, wasn't able to contribute what they hoped he would. But the guy is very tough. He's very much a gamer, very the kind of guy you wouldn't necessarily want to rule out from being a contributor. And he has pitched big games for the Rangers and done them very well. So he's also a guy that you can think about. And it would surprise me if there's not at least another non-roster candidate in camp with the Rangers looking to crack that starting rotation. They've also got Robbie Ross, who pitched out of the bullpen the last couple of years. He's a left-handed pitcher, and they stretched him out in winter ball to be a starter. And he's got a good array of stuff, came up through the minors as a starter. And so I wouldn't rule him out from the competition either. He's got a chance to contribute to this team. He'll definitely be in the bullpen, but he could pitch well enough in spring training in a starting role that they might decide to keep him there as well.
Sounds like a really good team. And then, of course, they've got Natale Felice and Omarón. His name is Soria, last name. I forget his first name, but they have a great crew.
They do. And whoever doesn't make the starting rotation theoretically has the potential to go back and pitch in that bullpen. And so they've got Tanner Shepherds, who has a big arm. They've got Joaquin Soria, who has been a closer for the Royals.
There you go, Joaquin Soria. Thank you.
Natale Felice is on his second year back from Tommy John surgery. And so he hopefully will be fully recovered and somewhere back to the velocity he had before and be an effective pitcher. So the good news is there, they've got good depth in the bullpen. They've got a couple of other young pitchers with big arms, Wilmer Font, among others, who might shuffle back and forth between AAA and the Rangers and could be that next bullpen breakout candidate. So from the pitching side, you'd like to think the Rangers are faring pretty well. one thing to keep in mind here is this team played in the 163rd game last year. They were not a bad team. They were a good team. They just – and then they went off in the offseason and tried to address the weaknesses they had. You have to – if you're a Rangers fan, you have to feel pretty good about how this team has positioned itself.
Absolutely. Now, we talk about impact of losing players around here quite a bit because this is – we do a lot of fantasy baseball, if you didn't know that. But losing Ian Kinsler, what type of impact is that going to have on the Rangers? Although they did get what they needed, Ian Kinsler's been around since he was a kid, right?
He was. He was a player who was drafted and developed by the Rangers, a middle-round draft pick who just took off, hit 400 in A-ball, and just rocketed through the system. And he was also very much a leader in the clubhouse. He was a terrific guy. Obviously, as long as he was there and as long as I was there, we worked together doing, you know, a commercial or whatever. And a guy that was well-respected in the clubhouse, well-respected, I think, by the front office, by the folks who do things like community relations. And so his loss will be felt. The Rangers hopefully have guys like Adrian Beltre, Elvis Andrus, that will cause it to not be a big deal in the clubhouse that he's gone. That's what you hope, and that's the way the Rangers, I'm sure, are evaluating it. And then he was also very productive on the field. Ian Kinsler was an incredibly versatile player. Ian Kinsler could beat you in a lot of ways. He could beat you with his glove. He improved his defense at second base immeasurably over the last few years. He could beat you on the base paths because he could steal bases. He was a very intelligent base stealer. He could hit the ball over the wall. He had power. He could hit line drives. He had a lot. Ian Kinsler is a very good player for the Rangers in a lot of ways. But their farm system is very strong in the middle infield. Jerkson Profar, who was effectively the utility infielder last year, I remember one of the guys in the Rangers front office telling me just how high they thought his ceiling was, and they felt like it was really high. And baseball, I think, seems to agree. So he slides into the second base hole, and that's a big reason why the Ian Kinsler trade theoretically made sense for the Rangers, is they had that guy ready to go. And they've got a couple of other guys in the middle infield ready to move into the upper minors that if Profar does not play well or if there's an injury, they've got good depth in those areas.
I think Jerks and Profar is going to be fantastic, but I'm wondering how long he'll end up with the Rangers, though, because they like to pull the trigger over there. And he would bring in some serious bacon. There's no question about that.
And that's where their depth in the middle infield in the minors comes into play. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year. If Profar succeeds from a baseball standpoint, well, okay, no big deal. Maybe you've got your infield for the next 6 years because Andrus is signed to a long-term contract. If he doesn't, now you've got the option to, let's say, and if it's because of injury, let's say, you've got the option to trade him and bring up a Sardinas or an Odor to play that position and see if they succeed. It's kind of a nice problem to have, if you will, that you've got young players in Andrus and Profar blocking other even younger players who have a great deal of talent. And either way, the Rangers are pretty well positioned to have some success in the middle of that infield.
All right, we've got about 2 minutes left, Rush. Nelson Cruz, okay, we know, you know something, people talk about the PED users. Well, here's a guy, when he got caught, he came forward, okay, hit me, I did it, time to move on. But he was big in the clubhouse, the players loved him, the fans loved him. How much will he be missed? And do you think they'll even try to re-sign him now?
Well, to your first point, yes, the fans and players in front office did love him. I don't think I ever encountered Nelson Cruz that he didn't have a ready smile. I mean, the guy was very well liked. I never read a single quote after his suspension last year from any of his teammates throwing him under the bus. He was very well liked, a person of good character. So I think we can't rule out them re-signing him. It's going to be tough for him to get a multi-year contract with another team, not just because of the way they're evaluating his production, let's say, but also because he's got draft pick compensation attached to him. Well, the one team that doesn't have to give up a draft pick to sign Nelson Cruz is the Texas Rangers. So if he doesn't find what he wants, is it possible he could come back on a one-year deal to the Rangers? I wouldn't rule it out by any means.
They'll have a full house in the outfield then, won't they?
Yes, and you know, people, I remember that what my frame of reference for this is last year when the Dodgers had 7 starting pitchers going to spring training. People are like, why do they have 7 starting pitchers? Why don't they get rid of some of them? You know what? You can never have enough good players. Guys get hurt. Stuff happens. If they can bring him back on a deal that's friendly to the club, it would not surprise me to say, you know what? Let's get good players in here, and we'll figure out what to do with them later.
And that's just right, too. Boy, that is absolutely correct. I can just picture Cruz coming back with all that lumber in the lineup. Oh, my God. It's going to be something. Anyway, Rush, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you next week in some capacity.
Phil, that sounds great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was Rush Olson, and you can find him over at rusholson.com. Coming up next, Mark Berman and I will be commiserating about our New York Mets, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
This is The Phil Nason Show.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the Internet.
And we'll be right back after these brief announcements.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the Internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
It freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the Internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the Internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
Oh, you again.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The New York Mets have been busy. They signed a couple players to minor league contracts, Daisuke Matsuzaka, and they also signed John Lannon. And here to talk about all that and more, please welcome from BloggingMets.com, Mark Berman's in the house. Mark, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks once again for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Up first, the big news, man. Matt Harvey, he says he wants to return in 2014. Do you think this is a good idea?
I say if he's ready, let him pitch. I'm not saying rush him by any stretch of the imagination, but if he goes through his, you know, all the rehab and he starts throwing and the doctors say, you know what, he's ready and it's August or September, why not let him pitch? I mean, the Mets and many teams have this one-size-fits-all mentality that, you know, every player has to take it, it has to be a year for Tommy John surgery. Every player has to spend X amount of innings in the minors. Everyone's different. Everyone heals differently. So if he's ready to go, bring him back. I mean, Billy Wagner came back, I think, 11 months or 10 months after his surgery, and he pitched fine. He didn't get injured again. But to completely rule him out, even if the rehab is done, is kind of silly.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know, man. I just don't want to see this kid come back too soon and blow it out again.
Yeah. No, I would never, ever do it too soon. Don't rush him. Even if they're in a pennant race, which is unlikely, don't rush him. Let him go through the entire process. And if he heals up faster than other people, then I don't see why they wouldn't bring him back.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But I like his attitude. He's very positive about the whole thing. Obviously, he knows something that we don't. I don't know if he's throwing yet or not, but he knows.
Yeah. He knows his body better than anybody. He'll know if he starts throwing if there's pain. And hopefully he won't be like David Wright and not tell anybody. But, yeah. Bring him back. The thing about baseball, baseball players and all athletes have a finite amount of time that they get to perform. So if a guy is ready to perform and you take it away from him, that's a percentage of his life, a percentage of his career. So it's really not fair not to let him play if he's ready.
Yeah, you're probably right. And you know what? The only one who'll know that is him.
Right.
And I hope he doesn't have one of those supersized egos. Well, he probably does, but it tells him, oh, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. And then blow it out again. That's my only fear about bringing him back too soon. Generally, it takes a year. So we'll see.
Yeah, that is a concern. I mean, you know, he might not tell the doctors if there's a little twinge or something because he wants to get back so much. So because he's such a competitor. But the chance, I mean, it's 99% he's not going to pitch this year. So the Mets shouldn't count on him, the fans shouldn't count on him, but, you know, in the unlikely event that he's ready, I think they should let him go.
Well, the fans are already chomping at the bit. They can't wait. They're already penciling him in the starting lineup in September, and I think that's a little premature.
I think it is, too. He was just so – just thinking about it again, he was so extraordinary in 2013 because, you know, everyone thought he was going to be a good pitcher, but not what he was. And then when he started out so well – I'm sure I said it. He'll come down to earth. He'll start to, pitch not poorly, but not as well as he had been pitching. And he never did. He just, every game was an event. Every game was, six, seven, eight innings of, three hits and one run. So he was just incredible. And it was really, it's a shame for the Mets and the fans and all of baseball that he's going to be out this year.
Yeah, it is. And you know what the shame is we want to see if he can duplicate that. Or replicate that, or come close to it, or if he's just another one of those flashes in the pan we want to see, right?
Right.
I know I do. I think he's fantastic, and I've compared him to Seaver, and I don't compare anyone to Tom Terrific.
Right.
I've never done that. So.
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
It is a very good comparison.
From what we've seen so far.
We'll see, yeah. We'll have to wait and see, but we wish him all the best, and we hope that he continues to be on the mend, and if we don't see him in 2014, hopefully in 2015, he'll be back to where he was in 2013. And if he's even close to that, the Mets are going to be in good shape at least as long as he is in a New York Met uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing about him, I'm assuming that we're going to see him on the bench in a lot during the season. You know, when he's not off maybe in Florida rehabbing or something. But when he's, with the team, he'll be on the bench. Whereas Johan Santana, we never saw him once throughout the 2013 season. And I just think that says a lot about the person and about the commitment to the team.
Well, in Santana's defense, he wasn't probably going to be coming back, so he felt like he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, he was still a member of the team. You'd think, and again, maybe he was off in Florida or wherever rehabbing every day and was never in New York or with the team. And if that's the case, then fine. But I just remember David Wright, when he was injured for that 5 weeks, he was on the bench almost every game. So I just think I think we'll see Harvey a lot on the bench. Just my thought.
More than likely, Santana was back home in Caracas.
Yeah.
Smoking a Cohiba. Sitting with his feet up, going, man, this is an interesting life. Yeah. Not having to travel every day.
I'm getting $25 million for doing nothing.
You get paid a lot more to do nothing.
Yeah.
He had, what, one decent season and a no-hitter.
Well, his first 3 years were good. He finished each season injured, but he was good each year, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was. You know what? That no-hitter was worth it, though.
Oh, yeah. And part of me, when I think about it, I still can't believe the Mets actually have a no-hitter. I got so used to the Mets not having one that it's kind of funny to think about that they actually have one.
Yeah, really, because I didn't think we'd ever see one in my lifetime.
Nah, me either.
Oh, boy. Especially when Seaver left, I said, forget about this stuff. But then I wasn't really thinking of no-hitters back then. I think the New York Mets are the only fan base that thinks about that stuff and dwells upon that stuff because that's all we heard for years. When are we going to get a no-hitter?
Because there were so many near misses with Seaver and Gooden and a lot of guys that it was like it's a curse. So it became part of team lore.
Plus, I think the biggest part of it is when they left and threw no-hitters for other teams.
Yeah, that's true. And my biggest fear in life, well, except for getting married, was – my girlfriend doesn't listen.
No, I know.
Was missing the no-hitter. And there was a game a couple of years ago. Dickie had a no-hitter going into the fifth or sixth inning, and my cable went out. And I said, holy crap. So I ran to a bar. It was a Saturday morning, so it was 3 hours earlier here. I ran to a bar at like 11 o'clock in the morning to watch the game. By the time I got there, of course, the no-hitter was over. But there I was drinking orange juice at a bar at 11 in the morning.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
That probably doesn't happen very often, does it?
No, not at all.
Drinking orange juice in a bar?
Yeah. And then, I got to see the no-hitter, and I was really excited. And it turned out Jerry Seinfeld missed the no-hitter. He was on a plane traveling back from somewhere, from a gig somewhere. And the cab driver told him, and he was like so upset that he missed it.
Well, I remember it was June 1st, right?
I believe so, yeah.
June 1st, yeah. June 1st or June 2nd. I actually went across the street and was pestering the folks over there. And that's where I usually go watch the games. Mm-hmm. And I was watching this thing, and I'm going, come on, man. Come on, man. Come on, man. I'm watching Johan throw the ball way up in the air. And pitching all over, pitching crazy, pitching sloppy. And then when Beltran hit the ball, I went, oh, shh. And, yeah. And everybody's looking at me because, I got my headphones on because I'm trying not to disturb anyone. But that's impossible when there's a big moment with the Mets because we don't get them very often. But, yeah, that brings back good memories. And I'll tell you what, bringing back memories, our boy is probably going to be back in a Mets uniform. Daisuke Matsuzaka. Daisuke has been signed to a minor league contract by the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Daisuke came up, everybody's screaming and hollering when they brought him in last year? Because he was filler material. You have to find somebody to pitch. I mean, you had to. And he was lousy the first three times he went out there. And then he finally settled down. Is this a good signing for the Mets? Because I think, it can't hurt.
Yeah, I agree. It's the same with John Lannan. No, there's no risk here. You bring them in. If they make the team, they make the team. If they don't, they don't. You're risking, a few thousand dollars in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, he was awful. His first three starts, 10-9-5 ERA. And I remember writing after his third start, I'm like, well, we're never going to see Daisuke again. Because I never thought the Mets would stick with him. But they did, and they were smart. And he, won three out of his last four starts with a no decision, lowered ERA to 4.42. Was really good in his last four starts. So, yeah, this is a fine signing. Same thing with Lannan, who always, he pitched against the Mets a lot when he was with the Nationals. I always thought he was decent. He's no world beater, but he's perfectly adequate. Just throw him in there with Mejia and, see who comes out. No risk at all. Good signings, I think.
Well, Daisuke, I'll tell you something, man. He's had a couple of good years. He had a couple of really good years. His first two seasons with Boston were really good.
Yeah.
Especially in 2008. He was, what, 18-3 or something?
Something like that.
He was incredible. And you know something? He finished last year 3-3, 4.42 ERA. That's not that bad, all things considered, because the Mets at that point were in a downward spiral. They had just lost Harvey, and it was just an ugly time. And he came in and he gave us some thrills the last three times he pitched. So, I mean, man, what are you going to do? I think it's a good one. Now, John Lannon, the Long Beach, New York native. Yeah, he pitched pretty decently. He's never had a winning season in the majors. Or I'm sorry, I take that back. In 2012, he was 4-1 with Washington in six starts. But his career ERA is, what, 4.12?
Yeah, you know what? Like I said, he's not a world beater. He's a perfect fifth starter. Throw him out there. He'll give you some innings. He's not going to, you know, make sure you score some runs for him because he's going to let up a few. But, he's just a solid back-of-the-rotation guy. I remember before the 2012 season, the Nationals signed him for $5 million. Then they went out and traded for Gio Gonzalez, and there was no room for him. So they put him in the minors for almost the whole season. And then when they shut Strasburg down, they brought him up. But, the Nationals must have thought something of him to sign him for $5 million and keep him in the minors the whole season. I think there's some upside with him. I mean, but, yeah, like I said, it's going to be a competition for the fifth starter. And whoever doesn't get it, either they release Dice K or Lannon or they put him in the minors, whatever they want to do. No risk at all.
None. So they were very good signings. And you know another thing that was brought up this week? The New York Mets are currently rated sixth in the majors. They're a farm system.
Yeah, that was...
That's, you know what? And 3 years ago, they were 26. So perhaps Sandy Alderson is doing what he said he would do.
Maybe. I mean, he made a couple of shrewd trades. The biggest surprise to me is how highly regarded Dominic Smith is. He's the guy they drafted in the first round last year, first baseman out of high school. MLB did a list of top prospects. He was the number one or two top first baseman, and the guy has played, you know, a couple dozen games in low A ball, and he's already this highly regarded. So that he's going to be someone to watch, and that could be exciting if he can be the player everybody thinks he can be.
It could be. MLBPipeline.com has Noah Syndergaard as the number one prospect. Travis d'Arnaud is number two. And Travis d'Arnaud is still a prospect. He hasn't played enough yet. I got in a fight on Facebook about that. And I said, if you don't even know what a prospect is, you probably shouldn't talk to me. Yeah. I do fantasy baseball pretty much for a living. And then Rafael Montero, number three. Wilmer Flores, number four. Brandon Nimmo, number five. Cesar Puello, number six. Dominic Smith, number seven in the organization. Very good. And then we have Juris Familia, who is still considered a prospect, down at number 11. This is, you know, things are looking up. Dilson Herrera, he's the kid that they acquired through trade this past season. This is going to be okay, you know. He's the shortstop of the future, they say, and we like to hear that. So,
yeah,
things are good.
Yeah, I mean, again, as we always talk about, you have to take it with a grain of salt with prospects because, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, Rhys Havens, we were hearing about him for years. He just had to retire. But it is nice to see the Mets mentioned highly and for some of their prospects to be regarded because for years they had nothing. I mean, this also, Alderson deserves some credit, but it also the fact that the Mets have been so bad the past few years, they're getting higher draft picks. So they have more of a chance to get better players. Whereas when Omar Minaya was drafting, first of all, he gave up his first pick a lot to sign free agents. And when he had a pick, it was a low pick because the Mets were actually good. So that goes into it also.
Yep, I think you're right. Anyway, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being here, Mark. I appreciate you every week. And that was Mark Berman. You can find him over at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall and I will be talking about the phenom, Addison Russell, and what he's going to be to the future of the Oakland A's. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
This is The Phil Nason Show.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
And we'll be right back after these brief announcements.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of Mets Musings, and I hope you'll join me each and every week as I recap all of the comings and goings-on in New York Mets baseball. I'll have guests on from all across Mets Nation giving their insights and analysis on the New York Mets. And you can follow me on Twitter at MetsMusings1, as well as on Facebook. The group name is Mets Musings. So tune in weekly to the Mets Musings, available at MetsMusings.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes.com, iHeartRadio, and of course, BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, as always, this stuff in lieu of actual entertainment.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and we're wrapping up our hot stove baseball coverage. Joining me now from AthleticsNation.com, please welcome Alex Hall to the show. Alex, what's up, man? How are you?
It's almost February. Baseball's getting closer.
Yes, it is. A few more weeks and it's spring training time. And folks are talking, a lot of folks are talking about a young fella, a shortstop in the Oakland A's farm system. And you can tell us all about him yourself. Addison Russell. Who is Addison Russell? And more importantly, what is he going to bring to the Oakland A's in 2014 and their future?
Addison, if you're an A's fan, Addison Russell is your future. He's the guy. He's the name that you should be dreaming about for the next year or two until he makes the majors, because he is that level of elite prospect right now where you can see yourself building a franchise around him if he pans out anything like he's supposed to. He was the A's number one pick a couple of years ago, and he's a guy who after the draft and after that first professional season, people were talking about that maybe he should have gone in the top couple of picks overall in that first round. He's a shortstop who can hit. He can really do everything. He can hit a bit. He can hit for some power. He has a ton of speed, both for extra base hits, hitting a lot of triples. He can steal some bases. He can draw some walks. And although one reason that he fell down to the A's in the draft was questions about if he would be able to stay at shortstop defensively or if he would eventually have to move to an easier position. And the word over the last year or so has been that it's starting to look like he will be able to stay at shortstop for the time being, at least until he makes the majors. You think of some guys play shortstop and then move off to second or third base as they get older. Maybe that'll still happen. But he's expected now to be a shortstop in the majors. He was ranked as the number 12 prospect in all of baseball by MLB.com. They did a top 100 prospects in baseball. Unfortunately, Russell was the only Athletics guy to get on that list. But if you're only going to get one, he may as well be all the way up at number 12. He's also the number one prospect in Oakland's system, which is pretty obvious based on what I just said, the only top 100 prospect. So he's a guy to get excited about. You're probably not going to see him this year. He'll be starting the year in Double A. He did very well in Single A last year. He'll be in Double A at the age of 20, which is impressive. If he were to have an absolutely amazing year and follow the paths of guys like Mike Trout and Manny Machado, maybe you see him at the end of September this year. I think that's very unlikely. I don't think we'll see him in the majors. However, if he does very well, you might see him for some amount of time in 2015, and that's fine. The A's have Jed Lowrie at shortstop this year. They don't need Russell yet. It's timed so perfectly. If things go well, and they rarely do in baseball or I suppose in life, if things go just as you plan, by the time Lowrie is leaving as a free agent, Russell is ready to step in and you have your new shortstop. So the A's system overall is a bit thin right now. And you'd think of Oakland as being a team that traditionally has a very strong farm system. It's a bit deceiving to say that it's weak. It's weak because it's done so well recently. You look at the current A's team, they could build an entire starting rotation out of Parker, Gray, Griffin, Straley, and Malone. Five guys who either were prospects drafted by Oakland or were acquired by Oakland before they were established in the majors. In the bullpen, you've got Ryan Cook. He was acquired and had his rookie year with the A's. Sean Doolittle, he was drafted by the A's. You've got Josh Donaldson and Eric Sogard in the infield. You might count Josh Reddick. He was already in the majors when they acquired him, but he wasn't established yet. And then they've also used a lot of prospects in trades for veterans like Lowrie and John Jaso and Craig Gentry and Jim Johnson. So you look at the farm system and you're like, wow, it's really thin. There's just nobody in there, you know, in the higher levels. Well, that's because they're all in the majors now, helping the major league team win and go to back-to-back playoffs. So yeah, it's too bad that it's thin, but it's only thin because it worked so well the last 2 years. So the farm system really came up big. The system as it currently is, it's all in the low levels. And it's a lot of the picks from the last two drafts. Those two drafts both went very well. Now, for the top 10 prospects on the team to all be from the last couple of drafts, you could look at that two ways. You could say the A's drafted really well the last 2 years, or you could say there's no good players in the upper levels. So the nicest thing that you can say about the A's system is that their draft picks have high ceilings. Either way, they've drafted well. There's hope in the far future, which is fine because they don't need a lot of help in the near future. They already have their winning team, and they're on to that point where they're supplementing with free agent signings and adding role players here and there. By the time they need some new stars, some of these draft picks from the last couple of years, like Addison Russell, could be ready to go.
Yeah, that's how you build an organization. I'll tell you, they've done a great job. The thing that's remarkable to me, and we'll move on real quick after this, is that he's played for five teams in 2 years, he being Addison Russell. He's made three jumps his first season and two jumps his second. Okay, he got called up to AAA at the end there. I think it was during the playoffs, but still in all, a lot of promise there, and the kid can stroke the ball. 17 home runs, but 2 years in a row, and that's not bad. He's doing all right, isn't he? I think he's going to be just fine. Another great pick, and he's going to be something. Now, the outfield. Someone asked me about this the other day, and I figured I would ask you. Cespedes, Crisp, or Gentry? Or Cespedes, Crisp, and Reddick as your outfield? How do you like that? What do you like about either of those sets of lineups or nothing about it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what Melvin actually ends up doing in reality. It could be tough to guess. He'll come up with his own system. If I were to pick right now, I would keep the outfield of Cespedes, Crisp, and Reddick and keep Gentry as the fourth guy on the bench. Now, that doesn't mean that Gentry never starts. And it doesn't mean that all three of those guys play every day. Remember, carrying over from last year, part of the strength of this team is that depth and that versatility where guys can mix and match and not necessarily have to play all the time every day. So you've got those three guys. All three of those guys are pretty injury prone. Cespedes gets hurt all the time. He dives around like crazy. He sprints too fast. He messes himself up sliding somehow. You've got Coco Crisp, who could pull a leg muscle at any given moment, and you never know when you're going to lose him for a month. And you've got Reddick, who spent really all of last year hurt. He had a wrist problem that very clearly affected him for the entire season. He had a really bad year. So those three guys are going to need time off. They get hurt a lot. And so what I like about that outfield is you still keep some offensive power because in the corners, Cespedes and Reddick, you can still hit a homer. And Coco in the middle there had a career year at the plate last year. But it's also very good defensively. Reddick, of course, won his gold glove a couple of years ago. Cespedes and Reddick were both finalists for gold gloves last year, although they didn't win. And Coco has been an excellent defender for his entire life. So you've got really this airtight outfield going around there. Now, where Gentry comes in is he hits very well against left-handed pitching. So he's another one of these platoon players that the A's like to find in these last couple of years. And so Gentry can come in and spell some of these guys when they're facing a lefty. Coco Crisp has not been very good against left-handed pitching the last couple of years. Reddick has been fine versus righties or lefties, but there's going to be times where you want to give these guys a day off, or you have that DH spot. If we have John Jaso DHing against right-handed pitching, you need someone else to do it against lefties because he can't hit lefties. So maybe you take a guy like Cespedes or Coco and you have just put them in the DH spot, give them that American League half day off, and then have Gentry fill in the outfield. So my real starting outfield, I would like it to continue to be Cespedes, Coco, and Reddick. But like I say, Gentry will get his time. He'll get his starts. Someone will get hurt and miss a month, and Gentry will fill in for that month. He's going to get his at-bats.
Yeah, I think so. And you hit the nail on the head. Reddick likes to play hard, and he gets hurt. And you've got four outfielders there that are absolutely fantastic, and they're interchangeable too because Reddick and Gentry can both play left field as well. And they both play decently. It should be all right. I mean, the outfield is good. And Coco Crisp, man, what a year last year, huh? What a season he had. And that was fun to watch. He's got the best baseball name out there, Alex. Coco Crisp.
Oh, man. When they did the Coco Crisp Cereal Bowl giveaway this year. It was amazing.
Yeah, he's something, I'll tell you. Now, we got another question came in, and I think we'll have enough time. Who do you like over there at second base, Eric Sogard or Alberto Callaspo? Who do you like? Which one do you think would fit the Oakland A's better as the starting second baseman? Because that's going to be a battle too, right?
Sure. And right now you really have three guys there because you have Sogard and Callaspo. You also have Nick Punto, who was signed during the offseason. The way that I see this playing out, well, I don't actually know how this is going to play out. The way that I would play it out, I like Sogard starting against right-handers at second. He did a good job of that last year. He's a good defender. And he's at least a league average hitter against righties. He's fine there. He's not a weakness. You've got Punto, who can play the other side. He's not that much of a hitter, but he can hold his own against left-handers, and he's a fantastic defender everywhere. So if you have this Sogard and Punto platoon at second base, you're going to have good defense and not a weakness offensively in the lineup. It'll just be decent, average, fine. You've got those two guys. I don't really see where Alberto Callaspo fits on this team. And we've had a lot of talks about this on Athletics Nation, and I seem to be in a minority here. And a lot of people see it as places for him to play, places for him to be that depth and insurance. And I'm okay with that if that is how it plays out. I think I tend to underestimate Callaspo's hitting a little bit. He's a very good right-handed – when he's a switch hitter, and when he goes up against lefties as a right-handed hitter, he's actually pretty good. He's not so great from the other side, but – the thing we liked about him when we got him is how he can make a lot of contact. He doesn't strike out. So in a team of guys who strikes out a lot, like Moss and Reddick and whoever else, you've got this one guy who can make a ton of contact. The thing about Callaspo is really he's a third baseman. He doesn't play second base that well. He filled in there and it was fine, but he's not a very good defender there. And that's why I don't like him at that particular position. If I have the chance to have really good defense up the middle, I'd like to take that. We already have a weak defender at short in Jed Lowry. Do you really want both of those middle infield spots to be below average defenders? Sure, it's a fly ball pitching staff, so maybe it'll be okay. But I just feel like you're setting yourself up for some bad luck there. But to me, there's a very obvious solution for Callaspo, and that is that the New York Yankees still seem to need a third baseman. We know now that A-Rod is going to be out all year, and the way that that team has acted this offseason, they've given out well over $400 million. They're approaching $500 million in money spent just on free agents this offseason. That's incredible. I remember in 2009, they spent $300 or $400 million and won a World Series. They're even beating that this year. And sure, A-Rod's salary is off the books for just this year while he's suspended. But, I mean, that's basically the posting fee for Tanaka, not to mention his salary. So you've got this Yankees team who is spending like they've never spent before, and that's saying something, going to win again right now. But they don't really have a third baseman. A-Rod's out. There's not a very attractive option. They've picked up Brian Roberts and Kelly Johnson, but neither of them are really third basemen. Callaspo just fits so perfectly there as a decent hitter who's actually a very good defender at third. That's his best position. He just seems to fit so perfectly. I don't know what the Yankees would have to give back to Oakland, but it would, you know, he's another $5 million the A's could get off the books. And I just don't see that good of a fit for him here. But I've been wrong before, and this is one of these cases where depth is good. Middle infielders are scarce right now. All it takes is Lowry getting hurt or something going wrong with one of the other guys, and you'll be so glad Callaspo's there. There's been talk of stashing him over at first base now and then, having him play first base against left-handed pitching. I'll believe that when I see it, but the team and Bob Melvin have been mentioning that as a possibility. So, conclusion, Sogard and Punto, that's my second base platoon. I still think Callaspo gets traded, but that's a guess on my part. We'll find out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Sogard, of the two, I would say Callaspo is the better. He has a lot more power. But yeah, he would make a great trade. I'll tell you what, he would make a really good trade. And that's a good observation there, Alex, about the Yankees needing a third baseman and Callaspo being a third baseman. That might be what they're looking for. And you're right. They spent a lot of money, $459 million on really three players.
Yeah, so what's another $5 million to fill in the last hole in your lineup?
Exactly. And you know what? Sogard, him and his rally glasses. God bless that kid. Anyway, great stuff today, Alex. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right. That was Alex Hall, and you can find him at athleticsnation.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all the guys for bringing us some hot stove baseball. Tomorrow night, we're going to talk Super Bowl, and we're going to talk Miami Heat with two reporters who've covered teams that have just recently played the Heat. Should be fun. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
You've just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening, and see you tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you, and I thank you.